Welcome to another episode of Congo Kids Life Stories, where I share my experiences of growing up in the Congo in Central Africa. My hope is you find knowledge, entertainment, information, and insight of another culture and a new perspective of the Congolese people and Africa. Welcome back to the series called The Boarding School Dilemma, Balancing Mission and Family, about the challenge of being called to serve overseas in mission work and having to send your children away to a boarding school. A complex issue indeed, as you have determined, if you've listened to the first three episodes. This is episode four in this five-part series. As a brief recap, in the first episode, I discussed the long road to even tackle this topic. I was advised not to do it and knew it was controversial, filled with mixed memories, buried hurts, trauma, and landmines from kids and adults alike. I asked the tough question of how parents reconciled serving God and mission against separating their family. The angst of parents having to send their young children away for months at a time is explored. Also, the emotional issues of the children are discussed, both the short-term issues at the time and also the long-term impact on the child and their relationship with their parents and themselves into adulthood. As preparation for this, I sent out about 100 surveys to parents and kids to get feedback and a spectrum of viewpoints of the dorm experience. I will be sharing comments from the kids' surveys in this episode. I also discovered that many of my peers went to counseling as they became young adults to help understand the abandonment, loneliness, and how their parents rationalized putting mission work ahead of their child's emotional well-being. The second episode explained the Ubangi Academy, known by the acronym UBOC, as an institution, describing the daily routine and schedule, and more importantly, the culture of the dorm. The subcultures of the boys' hall and girls' hall were also discussed, along with the daily schedule and routine and academic challenges. The episode also tried to capture the dynamic of the child and the dorm parents and dorm helper regarding emotional connection and relationship. Young children, often only 7 or 8 years old, had to live apart from their parents in a dormitory setting for months at a time, having to adapt to a new environment, often without siblings or other support. With the foundation of how the dorm institution worked in Part 2, I then built on that to share Part 3, which discussed the parents' viewpoint of UBOC and the entire experience of sending their kids away. It revealed the struggle most parents dealt with in preparing their children for heading off for months at a time, as well as how parents managed the grief and uncertainty of their children growing up apart from them. After preparing the parents' episode, I will say that I now have a different view and better understanding of how many parents handled this most difficult struggle. Yet, it had a cost on both the parents and the child that was sent off to UBOC. Now we move to the kids' viewpoint. What was the experience like for them to attend UBOC? Saying goodbye, being apart from their parents, adapting to the rigorous academics, fitting into the social ecosystem of the big kids slash little kids hierarchy, and the institution's environment. What about the friendships, good habits, exposure to social situations from living with numerous other kids? As a reminder, the goal here is to share the truth about the experiences, so you will be hearing input and reactions from a wide spectrum of kids. There will be things shared here that many parents don't want to hear. In addition, many parents will learn things in this episode that they had no idea about. Parents will be surprised. This includes the loneliness, sense of abandonment, forced premature independence, and long-term emotional trauma that many kids are still dealing with or permanently impacted their lives. Maybe you never asked us kids, and maybe we didn't want to tell you how much it hurt to be away from you. Regardless, hopefully this will be a reality check to parents who think their kids were and are, quote, fine, unquote. Believe me, we were not and are not all fine, even if outside appearances show otherwise. Hopefully this episode will prompt parents to reach out to their children to understand the hurts and issues we endured while growing up at the dorm without you. We also hope kids realize that their struggles weren't just theirs. Almost all of us had the same stuff to deal with. Before we jump into this, recognize that there was a rigid structure that all had to follow to fit in. Conformity ruled the day. Academics were tough, so mediocre students had a challenging time there as well. Know, too, that the boys' hall had a rough culture of big kids versus little kids. Little kids got bossed around, beat up, and were not treated well by the big kids. Though this isn't true of every big kid being mean to little kids, generally this was the tone in the boys' hall. The girls' hall had a similar line between the big girls and little girls, though not as physical. But there were cliques and some mean girls' environments, while others were more nurturing and sisterly. These subcultures will be talked about in this episode. I am also aware of the different opportunities and limitations that the boys had in contrast to the girls. This should be factored in as a consideration of the struggles of a child at the dorm as you listen to this episode. To wit, the boys would easily befriend the local Congolese boys and engage in mutual activities such as hunting, fishing, playing soccer, eating together, or just hanging out. It was natural for them to do this. And having an outlet outside the dorm ecosystem resulted in life experiences, friendships, learning, adventure, and so on. It was enriching to a boy's life. This is quite a contrast from how the girls experienced the dorm and extracurricular activities. First, the local culture dictated that most Congolese girls were busy working from dawn to dusk. They were taking care of their younger siblings, working in the garden, or doing household chores and cooking. Thus, they had minimal time to engage with the dorm girls and create friendships and experiences. So for most girls at UBOC, they didn't enjoy the same socialization with the Congolese as did the boys. As a teenage boy, I didn't think twice about going into the jungle and hunting with a friend for hours on end due to our shared interests. Well, a teenage UBOC girl could never do that due to safety concerns. The American girls constantly had the fear of assault and not putting themselves in a risky situation. Furthermore, the common interests between an American girl and a Congolese girl were much fewer than what the boys shared. So in general, the benefits of girls' Congolese friendships were limited. So imagine the dorm experience as a journey down a river. One enters the river and begins the journey from second grade till 12th grade at different points in time. I will have input from kids that entered the river of the dorm experience at varying points, because how and when one goes to the dorm impacts negatively or positively the overall experience. Let's start with the most likely scenario for success. The kid who grew up knowing the dorm was part of his or her future because that was just the way it was. Case in point, Peter, my youngest brother, knew his roadmap. He'd been born in Congo and watched his two older brothers go away 4 times a year and come home from vacation as he grew up from age 0 to 7. His only expectations were that when he turned 7 and started second grade, he'd go to UBOC. He'd be getting into the river and didn't know anything else as far as alternatives of his growing up.
When I came back to the States in 6th grade and 10th grade, those were the only years I spent here in the U.S., kids would always ask, oh, what about this? And what about this? Or doesn't it feel weird? It's like, no, because I didn't have anything to compare it to. So for me, the experience was good. I mean, there were some negative aspects of it, but my overall experience, I would absolutely do it all over again if I had the choice.
Some of the negatives.
Probably the worst negative experience there was, I know there was some bullying that you just kind of have to learn and deal with as you grow up. Only when I was very, very young, probably the second, third grade, but it was usually mostly by what we called the big kids. And so when I became a big kid, I always tried to make sure that I didn't do that. I always tried to include kids in soccer games and make them feel welcome, even though you always seem to have that one oddball kid that was out, trying to make them feel more at home. But the probably the only negative aspect that I would say would be just the first couple of weeks of the probably the first year, really, in second grade, just because I was away from home. I was away from mom and dad. And so having homesickness, having crying at night when you're going to bed because you're busy, busy, busy throughout the day. And then when you finally slow down enough to go to bed when bedtime came around, yeah, there were nights where I probably cried myself to sleep. And those are probably the main negative aspects of it.
He shares some of the positives.
I would say that I would accept that that's the way it was. I mean, if you look back in history of missionaries before our parents, before my mom and dad were there, I mean, you had people going to do mission work that lost their lives, that had to deal with a lot more struggles than we had to, and persecution, if you want to call it that, or trying to figure out how to get by when you're first establishing roots for a church planting in a country that you've never grown up in or been in, for the older missionaries. So I think it was a sacrifice that mom and dad put us up there on. And that's just the way it was. That's the way the mission board ran at the time. That's what was expected. And so as kids, you either had to roll with it or fight it. And usually it was easier to roll with it.
Here are thoughts on not growing up under his parents' roof.
So I think a lot of the core values would still be the same. I don't know how much different personality-wise I would be. I do believe as kids, as they have a tendency to go lean one way or another or develop a certain way with or without the training of parents, the training of schools. Very short little quick example. I love to hunt and dad doesn't. Other kids grew up in Africa and really could care less about hunting. Was it because of the environment of being in Africa that made me like to hunt and enjoy hunting to this day? Or was it just part of my innate personality that wherever I was going to be at in the U.S. or in Africa, I was going to enjoy hunting. So I think there's some personality aspects that were going to come out and have come out either way, whether I was at boarding school or not.
A question I posed related to if the dorm was a surrogate family or structured to manage the 35 to 40 kids. Peter shares.
I had a lot of brothers and sisters, a lot of friends. I think it was structured to manage the number of kids in the wide range from second grade through 12th grade through a system to raise them up with certain structure, certain disciplines, certain moral values, certain time every week with Bible study. I would say you have to have structure if you're going to have that many kids and that few number of dorm parents or dorm helpers to make sure everything runs properly. I did think about this a little bit when you had asked the question on the survey. I might be jumping the gun here, but I did find that as a smaller kid, second through fifth grade, the dorm parents were much, much older and they didn't have the time. So I didn't see them as parents. Well, I saw them as parents in the disciplinary authoritarian aspect of it, but not as in a, hey, I've got a problem. Can you help me with it? When I got into middle school, the second main set of dorm parents that I had were very, I would say, authoritarian. And so it was just a matter of could we get away with things, but not get in trouble. The last set of dorm parents that I had were much younger. I was in high school, 11th and 12th grade, and the dorm father would try and come out and play soccer with us, or he'd go fishing with us, or he'd go do things with us. And so I was older and probably had a better ability to create a friendship with them or to talk to them about stuff. And instead of being a small kid and having an authoritarian figure, it was more of a friendship, respect figure when I was in high school with the dorm parents, but also the dorm parents were younger, and so they had more energy to come out and do things with us as kids.
Here are some responses from my surveys on this topic, which captured the extreme positions on the spectrum. Paul Noren wrote,
"Yes, it felt like family in many ways, because we were all eating together and on dish teams together and sorted laundry. And the dorm parents often went out of their way to interact with us. But I felt it was too structured much of the time, even though that was probably inevitable to manage that number of kids."
Anonymous number one commented thusly.
"There was absolutely no adult parental feel, but there was with the other kids around me feeling like family. The interaction I had through my entire experience was no warmth or caring interaction with dorm parents. All of it centered around discipline or helping out with something."
A more moderate point of view is shared by Dan Noren, who wrote,
"It did feel like a family, but I have mixed emotions about it. It was rather artificial."
The general consensus of the surveys I received was that overall, it was sort of a family, But the responses were roughly split between not a surrogate family feeling and those who said it was, sort of. However, the family feel of Eubach became more positive the older the kid was. The surveys had the general theme of the negatives and positive of the dorm that were generally consistent throughout as follows. Little kids being homesick. Struggles with adapting and fitting in. Lots of bullying, especially in the boys' hall. Problem solving alone with no parental support. Forced independence and coping mechanisms. Peer pressure to conform. Lots of friends and activities and fun. Learning teamwork. Long-term relationships that exist to this day. Love of sports, especially soccer. Strong spiritual growth and good life habits and disciplines. Excellent academics and musical opportunities, both choir and band, that carried into adulthood. Linda Garber made some excellent points in her survey response and was representative of most kids. Here's Linda.
The positives included the relationships I forged, all of the fun activities we did, the structure and routine, some really good and caring educators, being around wonderful missionary aunts and uncles, being outside and in nature the majority of the time, the fact that education was taken very seriously and the powers that be were keen to ensure that our education was not shortchanged in any way. However, because I was from the CAR, I didn't have the opportunity to go home over the weekend like some of the local kids did. I did go home with friends a few times. It was stressful to always be around a group of people 24/7. There were a few terms that I roomed by myself, and I enjoyed that because I was able to go in my room, shut the door, be alone, and decompress for a while. Sometimes I felt like I didn't fit in, and there was bullying that occurred. In the States, if you have a bad day at school, you leave at the end of the day and go home to your parents. At Eubach, there was no escape.
Most kids I talked to suffered homesickness the first few weeks of each term after returning from vacation. Saying goodbye to your parents was tough for little kids. This is normal and to be expected, especially for preteen kids. I know I cried myself to sleep the first few weeks for the first 4 or 5 years I was sent away to the dorm. Let's talk the frequent goodbyes that were part and parcel to this situation. Goodbyes were tough for the parents, but they were more traumatic for the kids, especially the young children. Imagine being 7 or 8 years old and leaving your parents for 10 weeks with no communication, save for a few letters. How heart-wrenching for the child. There were a lot of tears and lots of sadness the first week or two of each term. Abandonment, rejection, and loneliness were all part of the emotional soup a little kid had to work through. One story I heard was about a boy whose little brother started attending. It was so tough on the little one that every night he'd climb into his big brother's bed and curl up like a little puppy dog for comfort. That was hard on the big brother to see his siblings so sad every night. But later, in junior high and beyond, most kids had adapted to being sent away, so it wasn't a big deal, and actually, most older kids looked forward to returning to the dorm. Tom Peters, who attended Eubach in high school, tells about witnessing parents' outward expression of saying goodbye to their kids that may have made things worse for all concerned.
Yeah, it pained them, I know that, but I'm thankful in later years I witnessed some of the kids when they would get on the MAF plane, because we got MAF in the CAR, and I saw some of those parents just bawling their heads off when the kids would get on the plane to go down to Bangui and then take MAF over to Karawa. Well, good night. Your kids are going to suffer the whole time. But for me, I'm thankful that Mom never did that to our face. She may have done it after we left, but she didn't do it in our face, and we didn't witness that. We knew it was hard, but she didn't break down. Dad didn't break down. But some of those kids later on, I'm going, the parents are not helping the kids by breaking down like that and making it seem like this is so terrible that we have to send you away. Well, guess what? The kids are going to reflect that.
To further illustrate the dynamics of saying goodbye, I'll share a personal story. It also shows how little communication there was and tends to be between parents and kids about the dorm experience. I'd mentioned in a previous episode about winning my parents over about my doing this series having dinner in May 2024. While we were talking, my mom posed a question. She asked why I had reacted a certain way when I was 8 or 9 years old when vacation was ending and I was boarding the truck to take me and the other kids back to UBOC. She said this had been bugging her for years. Mom, that would be 54 to be exact. As she tells the story, the truck was in our compound and the luggage loaded in the truck to return all the kids. I got on the truck and didn't say goodbye. I simply started talking to the kids on the truck and remained stoic and merely waved as the truck pulled away. So after all these years, she'd finally asked me why I'd not said goodbye. I let a few seconds pass. Then I responded, "Easy. It was a coping mechanism. I mean, think about it. I just spent 2 weeks at home with my parents, my brothers, and was in a safe place. I'd not had to go to school, follow a strict routine, not gotten beaten up, and had 2 whole weeks to play and do what I wanted. And now, I had to face the reality of going back to school, not seeing my family for 2 months, having virtually every minute of every day filled, having to struggle in school, and getting bullied by the big kids. And I'd probably be crying myself to sleep due to homesickness the first week upon my return. So as a child, facing this, I decided to just suck it up and be strong. Besides, if I'd gone to you and given a hug goodbye, you'd be crying, shaking and sad and emotional, with tears running down your face, which in turn would have made me emotional and I'd probably cry. And then my friends on the truck would think that I was a wimp. So by being stoic and strong, I wasn't going to get sucked into a sadness funk by saying goodbye and make it worse and harder for the truck trip to the dorm. And now hopefully you understand why I just got on the truck and didn't say goodbye when we drove away." Now let's talk the kid that comes in later and jumps in the UBOC River who is straight from the States and is totally ignorant to the change in lifestyle and the UBOC experience. This kid from the U.S. shows up a total newbie, not having a clue about Congo, the dorm, the African culture, and the language. And they'd given up the luxuries of the U.S., their friends, and being under their parents' roof every night. That child was getting into the river with lots of unknowns and more challenges to adapt and fit in than my brother. Peter Transberg was one such kid, entering UBOC in sixth grade. Here are some of the challenges he faced.
I talked less than I listened. I can stand back and just be like, oh, observe what's going on. So I knew that I needed to do that there because I didn't have a clue. As you mentioned, I didn't know what was going on. Who was who? I didn't know the stories, the legends. I didn't know the rules, right? I was learning them from day one on. When the bell rang, what does that even mean? I had no idea. So I had to learn that pretty quick. I'd say in the first couple of weeks, I relied a lot on my brother. Again, you know, 1 year apart, you know, we were both learning it all together. That diverged after the first month or so, I would say for sure. But there was a lot of like, do you know what's going on? No, I don't know what's going on. What am I supposed to do here? I don't know. It's new to me too. But so we had each other at least to talk to and rely on in that sort of ignorance. Kids my age, the fifth and sixth graders, there were only a few of us, right? In any given class, there were only ever a handful, right? And so one friend, fifth grader, Mark Hopkins, he and I immediately bonded. And he knew the drill. He'd been there since, you know, second grade. He knew all that stuff, which I did not know. So it was super helpful to have him. And in fact, there was enough room in the dorm for us each to have had a room. But he and I decided to share a room, even though there was an empty room, because I needed it. I was like, oh yeah, this is super helpful. And he wanted it. So we roomed together. And that was really, really helpful to have a peer, a little bit younger, but who knew everything that was going on. So that was super helpful. And then pretty early on, I would say in that first year, I bonded a lot with Tim Olson, who was 2 years older than me. And he and I, you know, became really close friends. And again, he'd been there since forever. And he was an eighth grader, so already a big kid. And so that helped me a lot as well, to have someone that really knew he really knew the run of everything.
There were positive takeaways.
It was an overwhelmingly positive experience overall. Of course, there were negatives involved, but for me, the positives certainly outweighed that. And I would say I benefited a lot from the environment that was there, but I really benefited from having that sort of larger family feel. I did feel like the adults were family, right? I felt like aunt and uncle, we all called them aunt and uncle, right? The dorm parents, I did feel close to them. I felt like they cared for me and took care of me, right? And that was important. Having even more siblings than I already had there at the school, I did feel like the little kids were my little siblings and the big kids were the big siblings, the good and the bad, which comes with siblings. I would say just super fond memories from a time for me that was very formative. I was there from ages 11 to 17 on and off with furlough and so on. So for me, super formative years, just really important years in a person's life that impacted a lot of my outlook on life. Not so much, I don't think, my personality. And I think that's where I feel like it probably would have turned out somewhat similar in terms of my traits and so on, regardless of where I'd grown up. But clearly with regard to my view of the world and of other people and how to interact with other people, I think certainly shaped that in a pretty significant way.
But the boys' hall hierarchy was a challenge.
Pecking order of socialization of dorm kids, especially boys, because that's my experience. I'm sure the girls had their own pecking order and that I wasn't part of. But for the boys, there was clearly a lot going on. When you put, 20, 30, 40 boys from age 8 to 18 together, there's a whole lot of figuring out, where do I fit in this? And that can change over time, depending on what you do or what you say or how you are, who you interact with and all that. And that's pretty natural, obviously. But obviously that comes with some negatives too. And I'd say there was certainly bullying or, abuse, certainly abuse, but I would say to some extent, common abuse among boys, especially, where you had to figure out, am I bigger? Am I stronger? Am I faster than this kid? Can I get under their skin? And that happened, I think, among peers at your same level, but it also happened among just the range of kids, especially the big kids. Certainly, once you are in seventh grade and you had to work your way up to 12th grade, then there was a lot of that jockeying for position and who was cool, who was not, and how could you get there? And I think some suffered more than others from the teasing or from the, the quote-unquote abuse that could certainly happen in an environment where people are trying to figure out who they are and where they fit within the social order.
He articulates well the various dimensions of how the physical separation from his parents impacted him in future years.
While overwhelmingly positive, the whole dorm experience, I would say that sort of premature physical separation from my parents, which ultimately led to an emotional separation and mental, because you're not interacting with them on a day-to-day basis. So that premature separation, as it were, I think it led to a distance between me and my parents that persisted for years after. And I would say that I didn't even recognize that distance as a negative at the time. In fact, and I certainly didn't recognize the converse of that, which is that I gained independence early, right? Like I gained independence from my parents earlier than most sort of American kids would when they go off to college. I started gaining that much earlier by going to a boarding school from age 11. But I feel from my experience that I got the positive of that, which is independence. Learn to make decisions on my own and depend on myself and be somewhat autonomous outside of that relationship with my parents. But I also suffered from a prematurely ruptured relationship with my parents, one that I do feel, not so much at the time, but in later years, sort of late high school when we returned to the U.S., college years, I felt like that's when I really felt the distance, because I didn't count on them in the way that I might have if I'd built and maintained a relationship with them over all those years that were otherwise at boarding school. So I do feel that was a persistent and a lasting negative that came out of the boarding school experience for me. But I would say there was definitely from my side, a bit of resentment about it. But again, years later, upon reflection, not at the time. At the time, I did not recognize this at all. I didn't see that there was a separation. I just thought, well, this is my life. This is normal. Here's where I'm going. And I didn't yearn for my parents, that connection with my parents, perhaps, right? I didn't feel like it was a loss at the time. It was only later that I recognized that that had a lasting impact on what and how I would interact with them in the future. Sending us to UBOC was the right choice, as we've all discussed before. It wouldn't have been good for academics or socialization for me as a kid to be homeschooled. My mom even said this recently, that she would have had to homeschool us, and that means she wouldn't have been able to do her literacy ministry or anything else that she was working on, right? Which is part of the reason they went. So I get it, and I fully agree. We all have always agreed the dorm or sending us to UBOC was the right choice.
In the episode featuring the parents, we heard about the efforts to see the kids midterm. Parents would sometimes fly their kids home for a weekend or go visit them halfway through the term. Interestingly, I did hear that there was an unspoken rule that this midterm connecting with the kids was discouraged. Why, you might ask? Well, a young child takes a week or two to settle in and then get past the homesickness into the routine of the dorm life. They tended to forget about their parents and be absorbed in the dorm culture and life. Then, 4 or 5 weeks in, say mom and dad show up. The kid is all happy and excited and spends the weekend with them. But on Saturday night, the kid realized they're going to be leaving on Sunday afternoon, and so would get all sad again, having to say goodbye. And then it takes another few days to get past the sadness and homesickness and back into the normal routine again. Disrupting the child's emotions midterm wasn't always a good thing in some cases, though most kids I talked to loved seeing their folks midterm. I know I did. The positives did outweigh the negatives, I think. Nonetheless, an interesting concept to ponder. On a personal note, I've made this confession directly to Gene and Lori Bradford as it relates to the issue of parents visiting the dorm midterm, and they've given me permission to share this story. And I need to publicly apologize to the Bradford kids now for my unchristian thoughts at the time. Well, Gene's job as the mission bookkeeper brought him to Carowa, where UBOC was located, several times each term. He, and sometimes Lori, would get to see their kids every couple of weeks, while I wouldn't see my parents for the full 8 or 10 weeks at a time. I remember being resentful that the Bradford kids got to see their parents so much while I didn't. I rationalized it that the kids were emotionally needy, that they had to see their parents so frequently in order to make it at the dorm. While I, on the other hand, being righteously indignant, didn't need that parental contact. But now, as an adult, looking back 50 years, I realize it for what it was. A young child's way to handle what was actually jealousy. I was jealous they got to see their parents so frequently, and I didn't. I had convinced myself I didn't need my parents, like the Bradford kids did, as a coping mechanism. Plain and simple. Like any kid growing up, especially in a dorm environment, there will be times he or she needs to talk about stuff. Personal problems, struggles in school, relationships, advice, or private issues. Though most kids had independence thrust upon them at too young an age, there were times having a safe outlet for support was needed to get advice, comfort, or share a problem. I asked folks in my interviews and survey responses about being able to go to the dorm parents, or anybody for that matter, and here is what they wrote. Michael Christensen said,
I rarely engaged in any intimate or personal issues. It was one of the consequences of early removal from family structure.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being very approachable for sharing problems with, anonymous number 1 put down the rating of
0 out of 10.
Here is Jeff Aiken.
I I never really discussed anything serious with them. That was reserved for my birth parents.
I heard from a boy that he felt one set of dorm parents projected only, quote, rule following, unquote, and no nurturing or emotional care.
The dorm parent was too bent on catching kids sneaking out after hours or committing some other infraction. The kids felt the environment was all about not getting in trouble as their best way to survive during their time at UBAC. Not a nurturing or family environment at all to live in.
Brad Cairns captures the general consensus from many of the surveys and folks I've talked to over the years.
I don't think I ever felt uncomfortable going to the dorm parents to talk about serious personal issues, but that probably isn't because the dorm parents wouldn't have been loving or open to listening to me. It's probably in large part because of my own sense of independence, that growing up from a young age in a boarding school away from my parents created in me. You know, I think it's pretty common that TCKs end up just having a strong sense of independence. But I think if I was struggling with something, I probably would have kept it to myself, and I probably would have talked about it with my peers or friends or roommates, or maybe I would have saved it until I went home on vacation to talk about with my parents instead.
Expanding this issue further, say a child doesn't fit in at the dorm, struggles socially, academically, and is generally having a tough time. Mom and dad probably don't even know about it, much less can they do anything about it being hours away by truck. Or, let's say the child is bullied, picked on, beat up, and retreats into his or her shell to cope. Again, mom and dad don't know. And if they do find out from their child, what can they do about it? Will the dorm parents be able to give extra attention to the child to help him or her fit in and be part of the dorm culture and thrive? The young child has to cope with it by himself or herself without parental support. I heard numerous stories during my preparation for this series, ranging from bullying, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sense of abandonment, and more. I also heard several of the most horrible stories in communicating to parents and students as part of this series preparation. Consider this a trigger alert. There are several boys I heard about that were raped when very young. In particular, I specifically know of a young boy, a friend of mine, who was raped while I was at UBAC. Here's the unfortunate reality. He didn't feel he could tell the dorm parents, so he lived with that pain and trauma for many years, well into adulthood. His life trajectory changed dramatically because of this incident. Years later, when in his 40s talking to his parents about the dorm and the experience and memories of it, he mentioned the incident. He did not disclose the abuser. His parents had no idea this had occurred, and this was a shocking revelation, obviously, many years after the fact. This incident has caused trauma to this day to this person, and healing and closure have not occurred. The parents and this boy's siblings are rightfully angry that nothing was ever done to the rapist and justice has not been served. I can't imagine the pain, anger, and guilt the parents are carrying, knowing that this happened while their son was supposed to be in a safe place. There are other incidents of abuse that occurred in varying degrees of seriousness. Another awful one I heard about involves a preteen girl. She was raped multiple times. She didn't tell the dorm parents or dorm helper, but did finally confide in an adult about what was happening. The abuse did stop. Here again, she didn't feel close enough to the dorm parents or dorm helper, so she told another adult that she trusted. Fortunately, like the young boy, justice was not meted out against the abuser. She carries the pain and trauma of what happened, even now, decades later. It makes one ask, shouldn't there have been a person, a confidant, a safe place that was neutral for kids to go to? Unfortunately, during my tenure there, this wasn't addressed. I would have liked to have someone to talk to when I bombed the test, or felt picked on, or got rejected by a girl, or other basic life stuff that one normally relies on for parents when growing up. Linda Garber, who attended in the early 1980s, captures it well. Here's Linda.
I learned to bottle up my emotions at UBOC. I'd stuff everything down and act like I was doing okay. I felt zero support from the dorm parents. They were too busy with running the dorm, managing everything, and tending to the little kids. Also, I felt stupid for feeling homesick because when I looked around, no one in my age group seemed homesick at all. So I pretended to be okay. The only adult that I can recall ever having a conversation with me about struggling was Miss Peterson. I think she observed or discerned that I was having a hard time, and she approached me one day. I recall crying while we talked because it felt so good to be seen, and she was so loving and gentle about it. But she was the only one.
Linda, I can totally relate. And probably most of us UBOC attendees from that period felt the same way. Fortunately, in the late 1980s, the school and leadership recognized the need to provide neutral or safe places for the kids. Younger couples or individuals that lived at Carowa who were not part of the UBOC school or dorm were assigned to be available to help kids with their questions, struggles, and problems. This concept further developed so that the students had representatives who they selected to speak to the school board about their concerns. So the kids finally had a say, a voice, with the leadership and boards through these representative conduits. And I understand the kids' concerns were taken seriously and had an impact. Furthermore, in the 1990s, they worked to further establish a line between the school and the dormitory. This helped define roles of school and living for the children and kept things separate, which was more healthy than the fuzzy line that existed during my time there. Dorm parents couldn't be teachers, for example, and wear these multiple hats. It allowed for better opportunities for kids to find a safe haven. Also, new protocols and more awareness of personal safety for all the kids were brought to the forefront. Emphasis was placed on protecting the kids. And kids were allowed to say no to things that crossed the line. And they had a person to go to, which is huge. These positive changes were the result of several criminal incidents that happened and forced a hard look at everything. In addition, there was considerable turnover in the dorm leadership with newer folks to the field, short-term teachers, and other personnel that were outsiders and didn't know the culture. So putting these protocols and procedures in place helped with overall emotional and physical well-being of the kids. So I give kudos to the leaders for learning, growing, and changing to meet these critical needs of the kids the last 8 or 10 years of UBOC's existence. I wish these protocols had been in place when I was there. But better late than never. I asked multiple folks that served on the school board or in mission leadership about any known moderate or serious abuse. All were ignorant to any issues that occurred to the students during their tenure in the 1970s and early 1980s. Well, a lot of trauma and bad stuff happened, folks. Lots of damage was done to a lot of kids. One person I grew up with, who was seemingly very well adjusted at UBOC, actually had issues to resolve in his 20s. So he went to counseling to understand his parents making missions a priority, as his UBOC experience was very difficult, especially during the early years. Several others I know also went to therapy to figure out how their parents could put their service to the mission and God above their children, as they too had a difficult time at UBOC. Many have just bottled it up and learned to live with it. Others are estranged from their parents for the pain of separation and not understanding the dilemma and balance of mission and family that their parents dealt with. Others have left the Christian faith. But can you blame a small child for not understanding? Here is Peter Eales' thought on how parents reconciled sending children to the dorm while fulfilling God's call to the mission field.
I think they were pained, but I think that generation, again, they were more of kids are to be seen and not necessarily heard. And yes, we love you, but we're sending you off to be cared for by somebody else so that we can do the mission work that we were called here to do.
So how many kids are still impacted by trauma, the sense of abandonment, and abuse of varying degrees even now? After phone calls, emailing, texting, interviewing, and collecting surveys from numerous kids that attended UBOC during this past year, I can assure you that, sadly, it's way more than you think. Our dorm served both the EV Free Church and EV Covenant Church, as both missions worked side by side in the area and shared the costs of the dorm and school and provided teachers for the school. There were, however, several smaller mission organizations in the area that didn't have the critical mass to support a school at all, or in some cases only went through 8th grade, so lacked a high school for their children. The Grace Brethren Mission was one such organization that worked in Central African Republic, just across the border from Congo, so their high schoolers would attend UBOC. The student profile here was a case of someone who had lived in Africa, but would be entering the UBOC River as a teenager and would be unfamiliar with the kids, school, local language, and those types of challenges to fit in. Many of these Grace Brethren kids were in my class or age group, and from my assessment, many just didn't quite fit in as they'd entered later on in the process. Some did fine, but most struggled to a degree. Also, the school academics were tough for many of them, further causing difficulty in thriving at UBOC. There were exceptions, of course. One of those was Tom Peters. From my recollection, Tom adapted well and thrived at UBOC, even with the cards stacked against him. I asked Tom about his experience stepping into the UBOC River as a teenager from another mission in another country.
I think the biggest struggle, especially the first 2, maybe 3 years, was just getting a feeling of acceptance, because there was definitely that feeling of, well, you're from Bangui, you're from across the river, you don't count. That sort of thing. But for me, and this was not true for all of the kids coming from Bangui, from the Central African Republic, whether it was Baptist or Brethren. For me, I started learning Lingala, and that made a huge difference. Integrating not only with the dorm kids, but then I could talk to the guys outside, you know, the guys working at in the laundry, the guys working in the kitchen. My junior year is when it really picked up, but the first couple years was a little rough, just feeling like, well, we were intruders in some sense.
However, as an older student, finding an extracurricular activity really helped him.
The other thing that I think I had going for me is that I started learning mechanics up at the garage with Uncle Bob T and some of the short-termers. And Howard Farquhar, when he was in the dorm, he was doing a lot of that stuff. Like whenever there was a problem with a light plant, I'd run up there. So that skill and learning that work ethic really, I think, helped me in the long run very much.
Some of the positives for Tom's life are the following.
Part of it was learning some independence, I think. Part of it was I really felt like being in dorm and learning to get along with other kids, tasks that we were given, like Saturday jobs together, promoted, you know, a unity, a family idea. I loved the devotionals that Uncle Bob ran, and then having all the meals together too. I think it was all of that contributed.
Tom tells about connecting with the dorm parents.
But there were other things, you know. Uncle Bob was just incredible to go to and ask questions. You know, he's very deliberate and slow in his answer. He'd sometimes sit and think about it for a little bit, but he was very good in what he pointed you to. He used scripture a lot, which I appreciated. So I really feel like I couldn't have had any better situation. with the Seashores in my first year, and then the Petersons in my last 3 years. Really appreciated them.
So as you heard, even though from a different mission, Tom adapted well based on his personality, learning Lingala, and plugging in to be a helper at the garage and developing those relationships. And being older upon entering the Yubok River helped as well. There were 19 Yubok attendees that submitted their surveys. They ranged from attendees in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 1990s. 12 were boys and 7 were girls. The responses have broadened the spectrum of input and content for this series, as evidenced by how many excellent points I've shared so far in this episode. There were so many insightful responses to the survey questions that I had to cut and couldn't include due to time constraints. So to those that submitted, I say thank you. A representative sampling of comments from the surveys warrant being shared to fully paint the picture by the dorm attendees for the benefit of the listener. Here goes. On the topic of the Yubok structure, discipline, and academic pressure and expected behaviors, here is Brad Cairns.
Of course, boarding school environments anywhere in the world have a lot of rules. You can't expect a group of 50 or 60 kids ranging in age from kindergarten up through 12th grade to all live in the same space far away from their parents without rules. And I think, especially in Christian boarding school environments, and there were rules, it was part of the culture of Yubok. The expectation was to follow these rules, and maybe to also, there was a pressure to appear on the outside that you have it all together. Perhaps there was this unspoken narrative that, well, we wouldn't want to disappoint anyone. We don't want to disappoint our parents. We don't want to disappoint God. And so there was sort of like this sense that we wanted to please, we wanted to follow the rules. And I think that's probably true generally of MKs or TCKs in general. It even gets reinforced on our home assignments or furloughs, where we have to present this outward image to our supporting churches that we have it all together. So I don't think it was entirely related to Yubok.
On negative aspects of being sent to Yubok, Dan Noren notes,
I have always suffered from orphan syndrome, feeling like my parents abandoned me there.
On the topic of midterm visits or vacation, Anonymous Number 2 notes,
weekends at Lake Quarter were wonderful when they were there, but we were still in school. One unexpected visit from Dad when I was sick left a never forgotten lesson of a heavenly father who heard my prayer and saw my need and sent my earthly father who showed up.
On the subject of unfavorable memories and cultural dimensions of the dorm one conformed to, Anonymous Number 3 wrote,
missing parents, homesickness, all the leavings. I cried at the airports for years, feeling stupid or less than if I wasn't smart enough. Supervision by the older kids forced collective morality and assumptions of what's true or false or acceptable behavior, as in, what if they hear about it? They being the supporters or the board or mission agency. Strong assumptions about how girls in particular should behave. Example, don't boast or show off, especially your body. Don't be a flirt. The definition of what is modest led to body shaming. Big boys telling me I was getting fat so they could eat the second helpings.
On the topic of favorable memories and positive impact of Yubok, Lindy Lindquist wrote,
lifelong friends, spiritual growth from devotions, singing, village mission trips, learning and playing a musical instrument, plays, dramas, soccer, Friday nights, learning carpentry from Uncle Bob Peterson, Saturday chores.
As regards to things from Yubok that Ann Wester carries with her to this day,
I still notice when my laundry number surfaces in any setting. It's mine!
Ha 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 ha! And me too. My laundry number 40 will forever remain in my DNA. Anonymous Number 1 writes the following about forgiving his parents for the traumatic experience of Yubok, especially the younger years.
They truly feel bad about what they did, particularly Mom, which helps. But it is still up to me to own it as an adult.
Here is Jeff Aiken.
The dorm experience was greatly influenced by the dorm parents. The entire time I was at the dorm, Bob and Ruth Ann Peterson were dorm parents. They are a big part of my positive experience. I can't speak for other dorm parents, but they were great surrogate parents for me. Not perfect, nobody is that, but very good.
Music was a big part of the UBOC experience. Anonymous number 4 shares,
everyone was pushed to learn an instrument and to be in the choir. Most learned to love music. Those with real talent were supported to excel, especially in piano or other band instrument. Also, singing and being in the choir from grade school till graduation rounded out my music exposure. I took my love of music into college and into adulthood. I thank those at the dorm that believed in me and helped me to excel in music.
And I conclude with a few points from someone that didn't live at the dorm, but went to the school, as she lived with her parents on the mission station. Christine Thorpe Ulfelt, who I've known since I was 4 and was in my class from 3rd grade till graduation, asked to participate in the survey. I felt having input from a school attendee, but someone that still was around the dorm, would have a unique perspective. Here is Christine.
The biggest drawback was the need to sort of cookie-cutter the experience for such a variety of students. If you were pious, a good student, musical, and played soccer well, the dorm was a good place. If you needed privacy, learning help, independence, variety, and answers to probing questions, it wasn't a good fit. As a senior, I was allowed to be a teacher's assistant in the little kids' classroom instead of taking senior math. And I was allowed to play the violin instead of being in the band. These were huge to me.
Christine continues, making a great point.
I lived at home on the mission station. It was priceless for me to come home and over dinner report what my teachers had said, primarily in social and religious arenas, and have my parents help me think things through.
As I wrap up this episode about the kids, it is evident that the content has tilted to reflect more negative issues than positive. It is, however, an accurate reflection of the feedback I received from phone calls, emails, texts, surveys, and the interviews. Many kids chose not to respond to me or the surveys, which makes a statement as well. Yet, I wish more feedback and surveys had been returned to provide an even bigger base of information. But we must not forget all the positives from the dorm experience. For me, it is lifelong friendships, teamwork, how to get along, discipline, sports, fantastic academics with teachers that pushed me, spiritual growth, routines, keeping my house clean and organized, personal independence, and work ethic, to name a few. So many things from my years at UBOC I still use in my everyday life, and I'm thankful for those foundational traits that became part of who I am today. There are many, many more UBOC stories that could be told, both happy and distressing. Nonetheless, these stories shared today needed to be heard. Creating dialogue, understanding, healing, and restoration of relationships are the ultimate goals of this series. I trust parents are now more aware of what it was like as a young child to be sent away and try to survive and thrive in the dorm environment. I want to remind the listener that help is available for UBOC attendees. Both the Free Church and Covenant Mission Boards have committed to providing resources for counseling for those who choose to seek it if buried hurts and memories now come to the forefront. I offer props to both mission boards for acknowledging this responsibility and taking steps to help anybody that wants and needs help. I want to thank Peter Eels, Peter Transberg, and Tom Peters for providing their overview of the kids' perspective of the dorm experience. Going to boarding school was the hand of cards we were dealt with in life. We can't change that. Episode 5 will explore the question of, now what? How best to build on the experience? How do we accept and forgive the mission, our parents, and the dorm environment for our tough initial years at UBOC? How do we take the positives from UBOC, the discipline, academics, friendships, and other character traits to help live our best lives by growing and maturing in spite of some of the emotional trauma from UBOC? How do we best incorporate the good habits of structure, teamwork, getting along with others, a strong spiritual base, and all the positive character traits as a foundation to build on? And how do we use both the positives and negatives of the UBOC experience to our advantage in adulthood? I'll be interviewing an MK that grew up in Malaysia and Singapore that didn't attend UBOC, but has devoted her life to helping MKs cope with re-entry into the United States. These kids have to learn how to adapt to college, life, and living after experiencing being a missionary kid and dorm life overseas. She's licensed as a counselor therapist and will bring considerable insight into the episode. We will discuss how to build on and own all our dorm experiences and to move forward to have success and mental happiness as adults. I hope you continue with me on this journey as we summarize the prior four episodes. This will be the final episode of this series. It will be titled, The Boarding School Dilemma, Balancing Mission and Family. The Conclusion, Moving Forward from Here. So that concludes this episode. I hope you enjoyed it and will listen again. Other podcasts and blog articles on a variety of topics can be found at congokid.net. In addition, Congo Kid's life stories are also posted on Apple iTunes, Google Podcast, and Spotify. I'm Jeff Eales, a.k.a. Congo Kid, your humble host. Until next time, I will send you off with a farewell in Lingala. Baninga nangai, tikalamalamu. My friends, stay well.